This is Wealth Wake Up on KGMI with Dick Donahue.
The opinions voiced in Wealth Wake Up with Dick Donahue are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, financial, or tax advisor prior to investing. Securities offered through Cetera Advisor Networks, member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advice offered through CWM, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Cetera Advisor Networks is under separate ownership from any other named entity. Guests of Wealth Wake Up with Dick Donahue are not affiliated with Cetera Advisor Networks, CWM, LLC, or Asset Advisors, LLC.
Welcome to Wealth Wake Up. Dick Donahue with you this Sunday morning here in KGMI. I want to start out by saying Happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there. Hope you've all got great plans for the day. I'm going to have some little fun. I'm going to cook some avocado bombs later on today. You take an avocado and you take the pit out, you peel it. You fill up the middle with cheese. You wrap it with hamburger. You put a roll of bacon or a strip of bacon around that, and then you put it in the smoker and cook it. I'll let you know how it works. Never done it before, but I'm sure going to try. Anyway, the importance of dads in an increasingly fatherless America. There's a growing split taking place among American fathers today. On the one hand, more and more children are growing up without a dad in their lives. But on the other hand, fathers who are involved with their kids' lives have actually become even more active. The Pew Research Center reports that fathers who live in the same home as their children have become increasingly engaged in their lives of their kids over the past half century. In 2015, fathers reported spending an average of 7 hours a week interacting with their children, compared with 2.5 hours in 1965. Today, 57% of dads say that they see parenting as a central part of their identity. This encouraging shift in fatherhood involvement could be owing, at least in part, to the greater amounts of research showing the importance of a father's role in the life of his child. Nonprofits like Focus on the Family have championed the role of fathers and have promoted well-researched materials to back up their claims. While it's true that more fathers are taking the time to come home from work and throw the football around with their kid, an increasingly number of children find themselves without an active paternal presence in their lives. Pew reports that only 11% of American children lived apart from their dads in 1960. Today, that number has grown to 27%. So one in every three American children are now growing up in a home without their biological father. There is a father absence crisis in America, according to the National Fatherhood Initiative, and the results are sobering. Studies have found that children raised without their father are, 1, at a higher risk of having behavioral problems, 2, 4 times more likely to live in poverty, 3, more likely to be incarcerated in their lifetime, 4, twice as likely to never graduate from high school, 5, at a 7 times higher risk of teen pregnancy. 6, they're more vulnerable to abuse and neglect. 7, they're more likely to abuse drugs and alcohol. 8, they are twice as likely to be obese. From education to personal health to career success, children who lack a father find themselves at a disadvantage at their peers raised in a two-parent household. There was an article reported in 2017 that routine family bonding activities like reading bedtime stories and eating meals together have a profound effect on children's educational development and psychological well-being. Simply put, dads, we need you. So, to the fathers who have sacrificed for their children, who have worked to be involved in each day of their child's life, thank you. Your children will always remember your involvement in their lives. And to the fathers who would like to do more, remember the importance of your role. It's not about being perfect, but being present. Okay, 2020, is that the year for a recession? According to former Fed Chair Ben Bernanke, the U.S. economy will get a Wile E. Coyote surprise in 2020. You know, just when everyone thinks he caught the roadrunner, Wiley notices he has run straight off a cliff, plummets seemingly forever before hitting the bottom in a cloud of dust, and then just for spite, an anvil lands on his head. In other words, Bernanke sees 2020 recession looming. Other analysts are saying it too. And whatever they do, they get their name in the headlines. Scaremongering attracts attention. But there's good news here. The pouting pundits of pessimism don't think that the crisis starts tomorrow. No longer does some exogenous crisis event, say Brexit or Grixit, student loan defaults, etc., threaten the imminent collapse. Now, the recession doesn't happen for another 2 years. Another interesting detail. The new problem is that the economy is growing too fast. Remember when analysts used to say, since the economy is growing less than 2% annually, it means a recession is coming? Now Bernanke says the U.S. applied stimulus in the form of tax cut at the very wrong moment, with the economy already at full employment. In other words, real GDP growth is too strong, so the Fed will over-tighten and a recession is inevitable. Now, we agree with a recession is coming, someday. Recessions are a fact of life, like death and taxes. But predicting one in 2020 and being right about it is like reading tea leaves. It's pure chance. No one, and we mean no one, can honestly see that far in the future, not with clarity expressed by these dated forecasts. No one knows exactly what the Fed will do, but even the Fed. Let's say they follow their forecast, raising funds to 3.5% in 2019. That alone doesn't tell us if the policy is tight. While most recessions are caused by an excessively tight Fed, we don't think the Fed is too tight until it drives the federal funds rate close to or above the rate of growth in nominal GDP. Over the past 5 years, nominal GDP has averaged about 3.9%, which means if the Fed were to raise the funds rate by 0.25% three more times in 2018 and four times in 2019, reaching 3.5%, and if nominal growth slowed to 3.5%, the Fed would be tight at that point. A recession would be possible. However, in the past year, nominal GDP growth has accelerated to 4.7%. Next year could be as high as 6%. That means a 3.5% federal funds rate would not be restrictive. The Fed would have to raise rates faster and further than any forecast that we have seen in order to be tight going into 2020. At the same time, there is still at least $1.9 trillion in excess bank reserves. Until those reserves are eliminated, no one knows if raising rates can actually cause a recession. We do have one major worry. The government spending is rising rapidly, and the deficits of spending creates will put pressure on politicians. If we were to raise tax rates, this could cause potential problems for the U.S. growth. But the bottom line remains, the U.S. is not facing an imminent threat. That's why doom and gloomers have shifted to forecasting future recessions, not looming crises. But we think it's not going to be the economy that gets an anvil on its head in 2020. More likely, it'll be investors who believe in the recession forecast. Dick Donahue with you with Wealth Wake Up on KGMI. We'll be back shortly.
If tomorrow all the things were gone, I'd work for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife.
Welcome back to Wealth Wake Up. Dick Donahue with you this Sunday morning here on KGMI. As a reminder, we are Asset Advisors. We're located out in the Pacific Commerce Center. Our address is 5060 Pacific Highway. That's Ferndale, Washington, 98248. That's Suite 101, actually, Ferndale, 5060 Pacific Highway. Anyway, our phone number, 360-733-1200. Our website is assetadvisorsllc.net or wealthwakeup.com. carsonclinic.com. Of course, as you go through our website, you'll see about our relationship with the Carson Group Partners. Mentioned a couple weeks ago, we attend our Spring Partners Summit down in Las Vegas, and tremendous growth taking place in the partnership. When I joined 3 years ago, or made the decision to join in May of 15, I was the 25th partner. Last October, there were 52 partners. Now there's 92 partners. So a lot of growth taking place with what Carson Group is doing, and we're pleased to be a part of it. So anyway, if you'd like to know, give us a call, 733-1200. Love to sit down and talk to you. Okay, Fed ICE rates, the European Central Bank to NQE. So let's take a review of this week here. The Fed raised rates, forecast total 4 rate hikes this year. The European Central Bank is to halt bond buying at year-end. Singapore summit is only a beginning. The United Kingdom conservatives continue internal Brexit battle. The U.S. imposes tariffs on goods from China. So global equities lost ground on the week as trade tensions garnered headlines after the U.S. moved forward with tariffs on Chinese goods late Thursday. The yield on the 10-year U.S. Treasury note held below 3% all week and was at 2.9% at midday, despite strong U.S. retail sales and more hawkish-than-expected U.S. Federal Reserve statement. The price of a barrel of West Texas Intermediate crude edged lower by a dollar to $64.80, while volatility is measured by the Chicago Board of Options Exchange Volatility Index, or VIX as we call it, was little changed to 12.3. So, let's take a look at this a little closer. The Fed signals more hikes to come. So the Federal Open Market Committee, or FOMC as we know it as, voted to raise federal funds target to 1.75% to 2% on Wednesday, the seventh hike in the tightening cycle. In comments following the meeting, Fed Chairman Jerome Powell was extremely upbeat on the outlook for the U.S. economy, pointing to record low unemployment and still low inflation. The improving outlook prompted FOMC members to raise their forecasts of the number of 2018 rate hikes from 3 to 4 and increase their economic growth and inflation forecasts. The committee now forecasts that the U.S. economy will expand by 2.8% in 2018, up from 2.7% projection in March. Core inflation is expected to raise 2%. That's up from FOMC's prior 1.9% estimate. Additionally, Powell announced that he will begin holding press conferences after each meeting starting in January. The Fed chair currently meets the press every other meeting. Since the tightening cycle began in December of 15, the Fed has raised rates only at meetings, including a scheduled press conference. The shift will allow the committee to a bit more flexibility when it comes to timing of rate moves. Powell cautioned that observers should not read any policy changes into the action, such as a faster pace of rate hikes. And the European Central Bank announces the end of QE and issues a dovish guidance. The European Central Bank announced on Thursday that it'll reduce the volume of its asset purchase program from 30 billion euros a month to 15 euros a month starting in October, dropping to zero at the end of the year. However, very dovish guidance on the timing of the first rate hike pushed European bond yields and the euro lower, as the bank said it will keep its refinancing rate at minus 0.4% at least through the summer of 2019. So with the ECB President Mario Draghi's 8-year term set to expire in October of 19, it is conceivable that he could end his tenure without ever having presided over an interest rate hike. Markets welcomed the pairing of the end of the quantitative easing with dovish forward guidance, as the combination will likely prevent a significantly tightening in financial conditions. And then we're seeing, after the Singapore summit, the details are to be worked out after denuclearization framework was agreed on. So having agreed on a broad but vague framework to work towards denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula at Tuesday's summit between North Korea leader Kim Jong-un and U.S. President Donald Trump in Singapore, diplomats set about fleshing out the details of the agreement. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said he expects North Korea to take major steps towards disarmament during Trump's first term. Pompeo is expected to resume discussions with North Korea leaders as soon as next week. And we're seeing an internal Brexit battle that is intensifying. Rather than battling with European Union officials in Brussels this week, British Prime Minister Theresa May faced turmoil within her own Conservative Party. Rebel anti-Brexit lawmakers labeled as unacceptable a compromise to give members of Parliament a meaningful vote on whether the Brexit package that May's government negotiates with the EU. The clash comes amid the lengthy legislative process that will lead to the severing of ties with Brussels in March. Given May's narrow working majority in the House of Commons, she can ill afford any defections. And the White House approves China tariffs. On Thursday, President Donald Trump approved tariffs of $50 billion of Chinese imports, with the levy set to go into effect the 6th of July. China is expected to counter with a similarly sized package of tariffs on the U.S. goods. Markets have been remarkably tranquil despite the growing trade friction, with many analysts seeing the tit-for-tat duties as part of a larger negotiation that will ultimately end with a comprehensive agreement. And while NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, negotiations have faded from the headlines, Canadian Foreign Minister Chrystia Freeland said that discussions will continue throughout the summer. It should be noted that trade tensions are not limited to those between the U.S. and its trading partners. This week, the new Italian government said it may veto the EU-Canada Free Trade Pact because it does not offer Italy's specialty products through protections. And then growth burgeons in the U.S., but flags elsewhere. Economists are raising the U.S. economic growth forecast by the second quarter after a string of strong data releases this week, with forecasts topping 4%. Leading the list was U.S. retail sales, which rose 0.8% in May, while April data was revised higher. Small business optimism also improved markedly, reaching its second highest level ever, as small business profits reached record levels, according to the National Federation of Independent Business. Conversely, economic sentiment in Europe took a hit, with the ZEW index tumbling to -12.6 in June from 2.4 positive in May. Chinese data were softer than expected this week, as well as with retail sales, industrial production, and fixed asset investment were all coming in below forecasts. A stronger dollar was an upshot of the week's data, along with a number of central bank maneuvers. Okay, well, May retail sales. This is a great report, by the way. Consumers are feeling great. Retail sales surged 0.8% in May, beating the most optimistic forecasts and representing the largest gain in 7 months. The gains in May were broad-based, with 10 of the 13 major categories moving higher. Led by gas stations, restaurants and bars, building materials, as well as general merchandise stores like department stores, the past 2 months were revised up as well. As a result, retail sales are up a strong 5.9% from a year ago and up an even stronger 6.4% excluding auto sales. And while we saw modest consumer spending growth last quarter, rising just 1% annualized in the first quarter, that may have more to do with timing of growth than the trend. And the report shows the pace of consumer spending is accelerating, supporting our projection of a 4.5% real GDP in the second quarter. So given deregulation and tax cuts, we expect an average real growth rate of 3% plus in 2018 and 19, a pace we haven't seen since 2005. Expect overall retail sales to continue the trend higher in the months to come. Jobs and wages are moving up. Tax cuts have taken effect. Consumer balance sheets look healthy. And serious 90-plus day debt delinquencies are down substantially from post-recession highs. Put it all together, The outlook for the consumer looks bright. In other news, new claims for jobless benefits fell 4,000 last week to 218,000. Meanwhile, continuing claims declined 49,000 to 1.7 million, the lowest reading since late 1973, back when the labor force was roughly half the size that it is today. And on the inflation front, both import and export prices rose 0.6% in May. Import prices were led higher by a 4.9% jump in price for fuel, while agricultural exports, particularly wheat, corn, and soybeans, led the export prices higher. In the past year, import prices are up 4.3%, while export prices have increased 4.9%, reinforcing other recent data showing a rising trend in inflation. Dick Donahue with you with Wealth Wake Up here on KGMI. We'll be back after news and sports. Thank you for listening. Welcome back to Wealth Wake Up. Dick Donahue with you Sunday morning here on KGMI. Okay, going to continue with economic reports. Start out with the producer price index report that came out. It rose 0.5% in May, matching the largest single month increase in more than 5 years. More important, producer prices are up 3.1% in the past year, which is the 9th consecutive month of prices rising at or above 2.5% on a year-over-year basis, and the largest 12-month increase since January of 2012. And price gains have been accelerating, up 3.2% at an annual rate in the past 6 months, and up 3.5% annual rate over the last three. And while energy prices led the rise in May, jumping 4.6%, prices rose nearly across the board. Even stripping out energy and the 0.1% increase in food prices, core producer prices rose 0.3% in May and were up 2.4% in the last year. The increase in core prices is led by trade services, think margins to wholesalers, as well as transportation and warehousing services. To put the rising trend in perspective, core prices rose 2% in the 12 months ending May of 17 and 1.2% in the 12 months ending May of 16. And a look further down the pipeline shows the trend of rising inflation is likely to continue in the months ahead. Intermediate processed goods rose 1.5% in May, up 6.3% from a year ago, while unprocessed goods prices increased 2.5% in May and are up 6.8% in the past year. In short, inflation is running comfortably above the Fed's 2% inflation target, and with job growth remaining robust, pressure is on the Fed not to fall below the curve. In addition to a 25 basis point rate hike, look for updates in projection materials, the dot plot to show a shift in FOMC member expectations toward at least two more hikes this year, four total, 3 to 4 hikes anticipated in 2019, and this places the pace of hikes means there's no reason to fear. Monetary policy isn't becoming tight, just a little less loose. Okay. And we're seeing a rising cost for gasoline and housing that led the consumer price index 0.2% higher in May, continuing the uptrend in inflation that started in 2015. Consumer prices are now up 2.8% in the last year, which is the largest 12-month increase since 2012. More important than reaching a recent high, consumer price inflation has now exceeded 2% on a 12-month basis in each of the last 9 months. In other words, this isn't a blip higher that is likely to reverse in the month or two ahead. The modest pickup in inflation that the Fed has been looking for is here. Now the onus is on the Fed not to fall behind the curve. Taking a deep look at the report, energy prices as a whole rose 0.9% in May, while the jump in gasoline prices only partially offset by declining costs for natural gas, think home heating, as the U.S. now saw the warmest May on record. Meanwhile, food prices were unchanged in May as lower costs at the grocery store offset increased prices for eating out. So if you strip out typically volatile food and energy components, core prices increased 0.2% in May, and now we're up 2.2% in the last year. A closer look at core prices shows that housing once again led the increase, and we expect housing costs to continue to be a key driver of overall inflation in the year ahead. On the wages front, the average hourly earnings rose 0.1% in May. These inflation-adjusted hourly earnings have shown little movement over recent months. However, this earnings data does not include irregular bonuses like the ones paid by companies after the tax cuts. We expect a visible pickup in wage pressures in the year ahead. And the May's industrial production report came out after hitting the highest level on record in April. Industrial production slipped 0.1% in May, primarily due to a major fire at a parts supplier in central Michigan that does business with many automakers around the country. Due to the disruption, auto production fell 6.5% for the month, the largest single month decline since 2011. But if you exclude the drop in autos, industrial production actually increased 0.3% in May, which is a perfectly respectable number. The worst news in the report was that the manufacturing, excluding the auto sector, what we call core productives, declined 0.2% in May. That said, it's not unusual for the number to bounce up and down from month to month while the trend moves higher. For example, the past 12 months has seen core production rise 2%, despite 7 of the 12 months showing declines. The best news in May came from mining, which rose 1.8%, the fourth consecutive monthly gain on the back of healthy increases in oil and gas extraction. In the last year, mining is up 12.5%. And the rig count has continued to rise in recent weeks, suggesting gains in mining production will continue in the months ahead. Meanwhile, utilities output remained strong in March, rising 0.1% as the warmest May on record drove up demand for air conditioning. In other manufacturing news, the Empire State Index, which is a measure of factory sentiment in New York, surged to 25 in June from 20.1 in May, signaling the growth optimism in the region. Well, I'm going to go through the summary of the FOMC meeting, let the data do the talking. To little surprise, the Federal Reserve hiked interest rates by 25 basis points following the Wednesday meeting. Of much greater note are the hawkish changes made to the text of the Fed statement, and there were no dissents, as well as changes in the forecast materials. And while the changes are clearly in line with continued improvement in economic data over the recent months, it's a positive development from a Fed that has been exceedingly cautious over recent years and upgrading its outlook on the pace of rate hikes. Starting with the text of the federal statement, stronger language relating to rising economic activity and the continued decline in unemployment rate was paired with the removal of a long-standing language that noted that the below-target inflation we have seen over recent years, looking forward, language on adjustments to monetary policy have now become increases consistent with sustained expansion of economic activity, strong labor market conditions, and the inflation near the committee's symmetric 2% objective. So a look at the updated projection materials, which is the dot plots, gives some insight as to why the wording changes were made. The Fed's real GDP growth forecast was revised higher to 2.8% from 2.8% for 18. We expect growth that will be at above 3% this year, the fastest growth since 2005, up from 2.7% in March and 2.5% in December of 17. Meeting projections remained unchanged for both 2019 and 20. Inflation forecasts have also moved higher for 18, up to 2.1% from 1.9. It is expected to remain at 2.1% through 2020. The forecast unemployment rate was revised lower for 2018 at 3.6% from previous forecast of 3.8%. While both 2019 and 20 now show forecast unemployment at 3.5%, down from 3.6%, so across the board, changes point to improved economic conditions that justify higher rates. Going to take a quick break here. Going to back finish this up after we get a little advertising in.
'Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA.
Welcome back to Wealth Wake Up. Dick Donahue with you. In case you have questions for us, don't be afraid to give us a call, 733-1200. Okay, I'm going to finish the summary on the Fed Open Market Committee meeting that took place this week. So, as I mentioned a minute ago, we're looking for across-the-board changes to point to improved economic conditions that justify higher rates. During the press conference, Chairman Powell took time to reiterate on multiple occasions the strength of both the economy and the labor markets. And when asked about concerns that the Fed was related to recent trade tariff talks, we were glad to hear that they will let the data do the talking. In other words, don't expect harrowing headlines of doomsday scenarios from the pouting pundits to change the Fed's outlook. As with so many other events over the recent years, levels of media coverage are a very poor predictor of actual impact of when the day has done. That brings us finally to the Fed's projections for the pace of rate hikes. In March, there was a near even split between the FOMC participants projecting 3 or fewer rate hikes in 2018 and those who are projecting 4 or more. And while the shift has a little changed on balance, the majority of members who now expect 2 rate hikes before the end of the year is a total of 4. Markets, meanwhile, have come to the same conclusion, pricing in a 56% chance of 2 or more hikes over the remainder of 2018. So looking forward, the Fed still expects 3 25 basis point hikes. 2019, we still expect 4, with 1 more to follow in 2020. If that pace is realized, the federal funds rate will stand at a range of 3.25 to 3.5 at the end of 2020. Still below the 3.9% trend in nominal GDP growth over the last 5 years, a sign that monetary policy won't be tight for the foreseeable future. Also missed in the focus on rates moving forward is the Fed will continue to reducing its balance sheet at a pace of up to $30 billion per month, increasing that to $40 billion in third quarter and $50 billion in the fourth quarter. After that, the Fed is projecting it will remain or maintain that $50 billion monthly pace until it's satisfied with the size of the balance sheet. For the foreseeable future, the balance sheet has cuts should be 60% in U.S. Treasury securities and 40% in mortgage-related securities. Okay, a little bit more detail here on some of these things. The Federal Reserve, of course, raised rates by 0.25%. They expect rate hikes 2 more times this year. Noting strength in the economy, low unemployment, and moderate prices, the bankers felt confident enough to both raise rates and forecast 2 more times this 18. What does all this mean? Well, new Fed Chair Powell issued a brief statement and then conducted a press conference where he reiterated the committee's positive outlook. But there's less here than what meets the eye. At the March meeting, the committee forecast only 3 rate hikes in 2018. Now they expect 4. The difference is a single vote. In March, 7 of the 15 voting members expected 4 rate hikes this year. At Wednesday's meeting, 8 members signaled 4 hikes. The change vote of 1 member out of 15 is nearly as convincing of a story. The economy eases into the second half of the year, the number of committee members voting for more hikes could easily slip. Another interesting note is the committee's GDP forecast. The Fed's forecast for 2018 is 2.8%, even though first quarter GDP came in at 2.3% and forecasts second quarter GDP grew by 4.8%. So to get a year of growth at 2.8%, the GDP growth in the second half of this year would have to average about 2.1%. That's not a very exciting number. The Fed also expects GDP growth of 2.4% next year, 2% in 2020, and long-run growth just under 2%. If the Fed is right on GDP, which is doubtful, central banks have been overly optimistic for years. But then, don't expect short-term rates to shoot higher anytime soon. We maintain on a path of plotting modest growth, even though we get shocks to the system, like tax reform, from time to time. So consumer prices are up 0.2% in May, up 2.8% in the last year. So excluding food and overall prices, it rose 2% last month and are up 2.2% from that again of last year. What does all this mean? Well, oil and gas, good old oil and gas, pushed up overall inflation. While home prices, which account for almost one-third of consumer spending, expanded by 0.3%. New car purchases also rose 0.3%, but used car prices dipped as more units came off of leases and entered the market. The overall reading gave the Fed room to raise interest rates. One interesting note, airfares dropped 1.9%. That's surprising given that oil prices are 49% higher than they were at this time last year. If the economy grows at a moderate pace, airfares should reverse course and move higher. And U.S. retail sales rose 0.8% in May, up 0.9% if you exclude autos, so states easily beat the growth forecast of 0.4%. Sales excluding autos and gas matched the overall gains at 0.8%. What does all this mean? Well, consumers are getting their mojo back. With lackluster end to winter and spring, it looks like consumers are opening their pocketbooks, driving spending at restaurants, department stores, and even home improvement stores. The number bodes well for a solid second quarter GDP report next month, which is part of the reason that the Atlanta Fed GDP Now model forecasts GDP growth at 4.8%. There's been no doubt that consumers are out at the moment. Industrial production dropped 0.1% in May, missing the forecast of a 0.1% gain. So production dipped last month, dragging lower by auto manufacturing. Well, I mentioned this earlier, but motor vehicle production fell 6.5% last month after a fire at a supplier stopped production of such vehicles as the Ford F-150. But that only masked the weakness in other manufacturing areas, which fell even more, excluding autos. Even the production of business equipment slipped 1.1%. Mining, which includes oil and gas production, was a bright spot, up 1.8% last month and up 12.6% over the past year. Overall, the report screams moderation. Even though consumers look like they're spending a bit more, manufacturing, mining, and utilities are still plodding along at a very modest pace. European Industrial Union production was down 0.9% in April, so industrial production has fallen 4 times since November. Workday growth has slowed from 3.2% in January to a modest 1.7%. What does all this mean? Well, focusing industries production is the latest signal that the European growth union engine is slowing down. This will put a dent in the euro as investors take time out of their cash and look for stronger markets. European Central Bank President Mario Draghi should be concerned. The aging populations of Europe will keep growth in check in many years to come, and there isn't much the central bank can do to change that. And the ECB holds a negative 0.4%, keeping bond buying in place, but lays out the end of the program. So the EBC kept everything the same, but reported that it will lower its bond purchases from $30 billion a month to $15 billion in September and end the bond buying in December. In addition, the bank will hold rates at current rates at least until the summer of 2019. What does this mean? Well, the ECB is throwing in the towel. The economic bloc can't sustain meaningful economic growth, which would call for more central bank intervention, but the Fed is raising rates, which drains capital, and the bankers can't find enough bonds to buy. And a little piece on Bitcoin down here. Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies fall on reports of manipulation. Researchers from the University of Texas believe much of the cryptocurrency explosion in 2017 was due to price manipulation at one exchange, Bitfinex. What it means, Bitfinex is among the largest cryptocurrency exchanges in the world. It's also unregulated. The exchange issues its own currency, Tether, which is supposed to connect it to the U.S. dollar. Researchers believe that when Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies dipped in 2017, Bitfinex would quickly issue more Tether, which would be used to buy the other cryptos, driving prices higher. The researchers are well regarded in the financial sector, which makes the critique all the more damning. Cryptocurrency advocates were thrilled over the past year as institutional investors announced that they are joining the Bitcoin party. Those same large investors might be less enthusiastic if they believe that a lot of the froth came from illegal activity. Bitcoin is down more than 60% from its high in 2017. And St. Louis University is going to pay $3,500 to expose you to influenza. You can go get in this little dorm room up here, and they'll either give you a placebo or a vaccine, and then they'll measure how sick you get. Pretty sick, in my opinion. Anyway, this next week, third week of June, light on economic reports. We'll get two numbers, real estate, housing starts, and existing home sales. That's about it next week. Well, I've run out of time. So happy Father's Day to the fathers. Thank you for listening. Hope you have a good week.